Good morning, everyone. If you could please take your seats, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'd like to welcome everyone in person and participating remotely to Alameda County Board of Supervisors special joint meeting with Public Protection Committee as well as Health Committee. This is the morning of September 29th. I'd like to welcome everyone, and if we could please start with the roll call.
Supervisor Tam?
Present.
Supervisor Miley, excused. Supervisor Marquez.
Present. Thank you so much. And if the clerk could please share the announcement once we get to public comment after we hear the informational items for those that would like to make a comment in person or online.
For in-person participation, the meeting site is open to the public. If you'd like to speak on an item, please fill out a speaker's card in the front of the room and hand it to the clerk. For remote participation, you can use the raise your hand function, and we will have comment after both items, after both informational items as well as public comment.
Thank you so much, Tisa. Again, good morning to everyone in person and online. We have called the special joint meeting of the Health and Public Protection Committees because access to quality health care at Santa Rita Jail, is a fundamental responsibility and value for Alameda County. For context, on March 25th, 2025, the Public Protection Committee passed a motion to advance this critical conversation to a joint meeting with the Health Committee. The first joint committee meeting was held on May 16th, 2025, and featured presentations by the Alameda County Sheriff's Office and neutral third-party healthcare consultants Forvis Mazars to discuss quality assurance findings and improvement recommendations for medical services at Santa Rita. Today, Alameda County Health will discuss its assessment of WellPath's corrective action plan submitted in July. Alameda County Health is currently serving as an interim third-party reviewer as the Sheriff's Office develops its next RFP for medical quality assurance services. I want to thank Sheriff Sanchez for her commitment and partnership to ensure transparency, accountability, and improvement in care for those in our custody. This includes protecting the integrity of the procurement process required to develop the next jail medical services contract. I also want to thank her dedicated team and Alameda County Health's leadership team for their extensive preparation to support a comprehensive discussion about the state of healthcare access and quality at Santa Rita Jail. In July, in partnership with the Sheriff's Office, my office also convened a listening session that brought together a broad group of stakeholders, including Alameda County Sheriff's Office, the Alameda County Health Officer, County Behavioral Health Department leadership, including Forensic Services, County Council, the National Union of Healthcare Workers, a representative with lived experience around the impacts of the criminal justice system, and community coalition advocates. This was a very candid and collaborative dialogue, helping all stakeholders with better understanding of the county's responsibilities, process, and coordination opportunities ahead. To the community members and advocates who have continuously engaged our board, agency leadership, and regional counterparts, please know this. We are here today to go beyond listening. Our charge is to identify how we can make the necessary changes to close gaps in care, strengthen cross-agency coordination, and ensure opportunities for the community to meaningfully engage with our shared objectives. Your participation is essential to this multi-pronged process to improve medical care at the jail and more importantly, protect the dignity for justice-involved individuals. Like any other county service, I remain committed along with my colleagues to hold Alameda County and its partners to the highest standards of care at Santa Rita Jail, including a comprehensive and sound procurement process. Thank you again to Sheriff Sanchez for her deep partnership as well as Health Chair Supervisor Miley and Supervisor Tam, as we continue to move towards that goal. With that said, I would like to introduce our first informational item, procurement timeline for comprehensive medical services at Santa Rita Jail. I'd like to welcome Director Gasway, who is participating remotely. Welcome, Director Gasway. And let's just, before I advance, can someone give us a thumbs up that the audio is coming in clear online?
Yes, I can hear.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. So we have a slide deck to put online on the screen. Please confirm.
I think we're gearing that up.
Okay. So I'm Kimberly Gasway, Director of GSA and also the county's purchasing agent. And I'm here to talk about the current medical services contract, which expires September 30th, 2027. And the procurement methods we're going through right now to procure the next services. So this is a basically a generic timeline for a procurement of this complexity. And so the first thing is, in the past presentation, we had a timeline for spec development, but in conversations with the Sheriff's Department, as well as our procurement team, I changed the date to for spec development to be determined. The Sheriff is already engaged with the procurement department to work on the spec development and in discussions about how the process will run through, but they are just now, they are in the process of working on that. Additionally, they're looking at bringing on a consultant to help review the specifications to ensure it meets the needs of the jail population. So once they finalize that, a procurement of this type typically can take up to 12 months. Some of our less complex procurements take less time. So this is just a rough order of what we think, how long we think it will take. So we're more than, because we're almost 2 years out, we have plenty of time to get this procurement done, as well as offer up a transition time between the current provider and the new provider who is selected. So we finalize the specification, County Council reviews the posting before it goes online, and that could take back and forth, not always 2 months. Our council is pretty timely in responding to us, but we did put that in just in case. There's a mandatory bidders conference, and everyone will need site clearances to go to the jail, and that could take up to a month to schedule the event, get all the clearances. After that happens, there's a Q&A period where the proposers could submit questions. We get responses. Sometimes those are also reviewed by council. And then we issue an addendum to the proposals. And the bids are then due typically within a month. Then once we get those, we do a completeness check, qualifications, reference check, and that can take a couple weeks. And the CSC County Selection Committee is set up, and conflicts of interest are signed and written proposals. They begin evaluation that can take a few weeks. We once that happens, then we have a County Selection Committee does a vendor interview. Scheduling that on everyone's calendars can take a couple weeks. And the final abstract and sheriff concurrence to award recommendation, we review it with the Sheriff's Department and then tell them what we're going to recommend for award. Then begins, we send out notices to the proposer of our notice of intent to award, and then there's a review, protest, and a decision. So this is a protest appeal period that all bidders who may protest the selection have time to submit those and us to review them. And then it's we negotiate the contract and bring it to the board for approval. Now, this timeline does not take into account if we get an appeal. So after we say there's a protest and we review it, and if the protest is denied, then the bidder has an opportunity to appeal that protest. That goes to the auditor's office. And so that could impact the timeline. That's my presentation.
Thank you, Director Gasway. Can you speak to, I'm not sure if you have this information, but with your experience working closely with the auditor's office, can you give us a rough estimate if there is a protest, how long it typically takes the auditor to make a decision? Are they bound by any specific regulations, like within 30 days, 60 days? Can you elaborate on that process?
So GSA Office of Acquisition Policy reviews the protest first, and then we send a response. And that response could be that we uphold the protest. So then the procurement, we have to start over. If we deny the protest, after reviewing all the information. So that could take quite a bit of time, up to a month. That's why that's in there. But then it goes, the protester can appeal. And I do not know the auditor's timeline. Sometimes they're quick. It depends, again, on the points put up in the protest, but that could take a significant amount of time.
Okay, thank you. Who would be representing the sheriff's office today? I have one clarifying question with respect to the specification and scope. Is that Captain Prez? Welcome. If you could please give your name.
How you doing? Lieutenant Dan Murphy, Sheriff's Office.
Thank you for being here. With respect to the Sheriff's Office still developing the specifications and the scope, can you give us a status update if that work has been started? Do you know how long that's going to take?
So work's already been started. It started in July. We meet regularly to go through the scope and build it out. One thing we need to highlight is this contract will be larger than anything ever before. It'll have Cal Ames in there, the Epic, rolling out Epic, obviously the consent decree, plus RAJ and CARES First Jails Last, plus anything else as we go through and build out the early access, the stabilization program as well. So it's a very robust process and system. We're bringing in experts not only from inside the county, but also outside the county. We have county council on the team. We have obviously GSA, the sheriff's office, plus Dr. Clannon and her team are going to be providing input. We are currently in the RFP process for getting a new third-party auditor. And once they are selected, they will be part of the procurement and creating the RFP as well.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Supervisor Tam, do you have any questions or comments at this time?
Thank you, Chair Marquez. I appreciate the timeline. We were here in May, and we went through the medical quality report from MASARS. What I was trying to understand is this is a five-year contract that we have currently with this vendor, and you talked about there's a lot that have emerged in the last 5 years, whether it's RAJ, you know, CalAIM, and then getting the new data system with Epic. How has the prior contracts been processed in the past? Like, are they every 5 years, and has it been with this same vendor since, I guess, since
I would have to go contracts? Back in historical. I know we've changed medical providers several times over the last, even my tenure and before then. So I don't have the specific data on how often we've changed vendors. And I can get that. But I know we've changed vendors several times since I've been in the sheriff's office.
Okay. The part that wasn't clear to me was when the vendors changed in the past, were there things that were significantly different? Like you said, this time around, we have some new regulations and new undertakings with the data program, but in the past, did we experience something similar? I'm just trying to get a handle on the timing and whether or not we built in sufficient time, even though it's 2 years out.
Yeah, I think one thing I can't speak on all of them, but I know COVID was written into the last contract, right? Because that was a big thing going on at the time when that was being implemented. So I'm sure everything has as time have gone on and things have changed, things have been implemented to make those change, just like now. Just now we're going to have a huge change because we have so many more programs and services that are coming to the jail. So this will be a very robust system and RFP.
Okay, I appreciate that. Because you had mentioned specifically what we went through with COVID, right? And we had to do specific protocols in terms of isolations and monitoring and testing, and you know, we obviously had to learn from
Correct.
That experience and how we are going to be going forward, because we never had that happen in the past.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, we didn't have COVID before. So just like everything we've learned, and we've reached out again, like the early access system, we've reached out to the state and given guidance for best practices and things like that. Same thing with CalAIM as well. We get guidance from the state. This RFP will prepare us for generations to come. It's another layer of how we're building and changing what the jail is and what it represents. The jail is being seen as a place for second chances with our vocational program and all the other services that we're providing. This is just another layer in order to help the individuals in our custody upon their release. So it's going to be very robust, and we're going to make it very multidisciplinary, where our partners with whoever our medical provider is, with AFBH and the sheriff's office, and whoever else comes in, the community, community organizations as well.
But it's still a five-year contract.
Correct. I believe that's how they're written out, and that would be more of a GSA. I believe it is a five-year contract because of it takes a lot to switch over providers in place.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Tam. Thank you, Lieutenant Murphy. Don't go far because you're on the next item. Just want to remind the public these are informational items. We are now going to hear informational item number two. This is an update on medical quality assurance monitoring at Santa Rita Jail. The presenters are Lieutenant Daniel Murphy with Alameda County Sheriff's Office and Dr. Kathleen Clannon, Medical Director with Alameda County Health. Just going to remind the public, after hearing this second item, we will take public comment for 2 minutes, and then we also have public comment at the end of the agenda for items under the purview of Public Protection or Health Committee, but not on today's agenda. So you could raise your hand, and we will get to you after this second presentation.
Good morning, everyone. Again, Lieutenant Dan Murphy, the Sheriff's Office. So we'll go over kind of the background of the contract, but Supervisor Marquez highlighted it, so we'll go through that quick. The quality assurance process, the validation results, conclusion, and our next steps. Again, this was highlighted by the supervisor. So just real quick, we're here in May. We presented our findings. The board asked for follow-up, and this is why we're all here today. So where the scope of this is Title 15, as well as other state and federal laws that were required to give medical services to those incarcerated. Our current contract will be up in September 30th of 2027. So I said earlier, we are already in the process. This is a very big contract for us, and we're already in the process because we know how long this process will take. So previously, we hired a third-party quality assurance, which was Forbes Mazars at the time. They have since their contract has ended. We are in the RFP process for another third-party auditor. But until that group organization is selected, Dr. Clannon with Public Health has agreed to have her team, and they've stepped up to ensure that no lapse has occurred in the third-party auditor. So I'll hand it over right now to Dr. Clannon.
Welcome, good morning, Dr. Clannon. Good morning.
Next slide, please. So as Lieutenant Murphy mentioned, I'm here representing Alameda County Health as we are substituting for the Mazars report that you heard in May, filling that gap. So just a quick reminder, particularly for the public, about the quality assurance process. It starts with standards for care being set by national accrediting bodies, in particular the National Commission for Correctional Healthcare, or NCCHC, is one that's used across the country. Then WellPath, sometimes Mazars, but typically WellPath, identifies specific areas of care that are high risk or places that are troublesome, hard to meet. They measure how well we're doing it on those standards at Santa Rita via a chart review that's done. Then they pick out, Mazars in this case, would pick out a few areas where the scores are not what we wanted them to be, that seem areas that might affect safety. And those are areas that are assigned for a corrective action. The focus areas rotate based on performance. If it gets to a point where the scores are looking good, then that particular area may be moved out to a watch list as we focus more on additional areas. Then WellPath changes what it's doing in order to improve performance, remeasures the results, and then finally the third-party reviewer rechecks the same charts on the same individuals that WellPath measured in order to make sure that what WellPath is reporting is accurate. Next one. There are two kind of flavors of quality work that Mazars has been doing. The first one is quality assurance, and in general, that one focuses on small numbers of folks who have particularly high risk illnesses or conditions. There's a deep dive that's done on the chart trying to assess all the different aspects that could put this individual at risk, and it's medically complicated folks. And then there's continuous quality improvement, typically areas that affect large numbers of people, maybe everybody who's coming in. They oftentimes focus on screening and prevention tasks, the things that would apply to everybody. And then in that case, there's a focus chart review done, not on everything, but on the relevant things from a larger number of charts. And we did both of those things on behalf of the sheriff's office in this review. Next one. The current areas that we're focused on, you may remember these from the report from Mazars in May. There's what is called access to care in the NCCHC standards, and you can see there how that area of care is described. In this particular case, what's being looked at is the problem list. So that says all of the different relevant, important things that are going on with this person's health recorded in the chart to be available so that the person can receive adequate care. So that's what access to care means in this context. The initial health assessment, I think, is pretty obvious. And then the informed consent piece is specifically about medications. If a person refuses to take a medication that's being offered, then there's a process for making sure to document that the individual knows what the consequences could be of that in terms of their health. And then that should be documented in the chart. Next one, those are the quality assurance focus areas. And then in terms of the CQI areas, the quality continuous quality improvement, there's screening in the receiving area. So that's a quick screen looking at, that should happen for everyone coming in to look at anything that could be an immediate danger. Is this a person who has diabetes, who's on insulin? Is this a person who might have a seizure? Is this a person withdrawing? Things that require immediate attention and thought in terms of where that person needs to be for the next hours. There's chronic care, the different aspects of providing care to someone who has a chronic illness, and then a specific focus on withdrawal, in particular from either opioids or alcohol. Withdrawal from alcohol can be very dangerous, actually can be deadly, and withdrawal from opioids is really dramatic and is something that we can intervene to assist people. So, and those two things happen typically within the first 24 hours that people are incarcerated. So there is a focus on them. So those are kind of the areas of care that Mazars reported on and were their focuses when they talked with you in May. Next one. Our involvement as Alameda County Health included reviewing the previous Mazars reports so that we could make sure that this one links to those and is understandable to you and to the public who are interested in this. We met with WellPath to understand their findings from previous reports and also their most recent report from July. And then we did, with the assistance of a experienced nurse who does these same chart reviews for NCCHC, and with the guidance of a few people I'll talk about in a second, we did a review, a validation review. So we went back through, again, the same charts, the same people's information to see if what WellPath was reporting, if we agreed with it. Our group includes myself, the health officer, the director of public health nursing, and also our chief medical office for behavioral health. Not all of those people were involved in this particular review. Because we are being attentive to issues around the procurements underway. We also relied on two subject matter experts. We have a physician who's in correctional health in a neighboring county, and also a nurse chart reviewer that I mentioned before, who has many years of experience. So next one. In terms of the review, the results of our review, and the next one. So I want to just orient you to how these reports are looking. We tried to mirror the way that Mazars constructed their reports, but with a few changes. So you can see there the topic, the subject matter of the area is listed over on the left. These are all were selected by Mazars at the beginning of the year because they identified that these were places that needed attention and needed to improve. You have the results from the April review, which were reported to you in May by Mazars. Then the new ones are highlighted in yellow. And then finally, in the final column, there's what did we find and when we looked at our validation. So a couple of additional things I want to say, that there are blanks next to restraint seclusion and the informed consent. Those there were two other items that Mazars reported to you on in May. Those are retired because the score is reported. You may remember that Mazars reports them as corrected, that the score is lifted to a point where they were no longer on a watch list. They're now on a yellow list, so we'll go back to them. But that's why these two new ones were rotated in as being the next areas for focus. And so this was an initial review that WellPath was reporting to us. So you see the scores. What we found was that we agreed with every chart that was reviewed. We agreed with what WellPath was reporting. A couple of notes, what we identified as new to this process that's struck me as illuminating, I guess, is, as you know, WellPath and Behavioral Health have different electronic health records. That requires for the first issue, the problems and alerts, requires that problems be listed, be entered twice by a person who finds out that there's a problem, once in the WellPath record and once in the Behavioral Health record. If the patient has both those kinds of problems. And it is difficult to get people to do that, to double document. So the good news is that an action that you've already taken and supported is, in terms of the replacement with a unified medical record, will likely result in improvements actually in all three of these items. The second one is that striking the results of the informed consent. You remember that is if a patient or an incarcerated person refuses a medication being brought to them, is it documented in the chart that there was a refusal, that it was witnessed, and that the person was told, hey, if you don't take your blood pressure medicine, this is what could result. What we found when we looked in there is that the refusals were being documented in a very high percentage of the charts, but it was missing associated kind of documentation, in particular the reason for the refusal. Why is this person saying that they don't want their medication? And then also a witness signature, which is typically one of the deputies, saying that they were there and saw that this occurred. So it's a complex process, actually, to get consent and to document that there has been informed consent that a person is refusing, because it requires several people to do this documentation. Next one. In terms of the continuous quality improvement report, you remember that receiving screening is a screening that's done, a quick screening done within the intake area to make sure that there's nothing acute. You can see there the results that were reported to you in May. Also for chronic care. Each of those is a very complex segment. Receiving screening has 17 elements that need to be met for it to be considered a yes, and chronic care has 14 elements. And what you can see here is that the chronic care percentage stayed essentially stable, but there was a decrease in performance from July of last year to July of this year, and from those results reported to you in May. And in the case of the receiving screening, our validation report, we found a couple of charts in which we disagreed with what WellPath had said. Again, a note that for the screening in receiving, what we discovered was that it was happening within 24 hours in a high percentage, but that the struggle or the difficulty was around achieving it during the 8-hour timeliness standard, which is required by NCCHC, and which is actually very important because those items being screened for are timely. Then the final CQI report. This one is for alcohol withdrawal and opioid withdrawal monitoring. I want to just point out to you that these results are divided by shift. So AM, PM, and NOC refer to the morning shift, the afternoon shift, and the overnight shift. It is a 24-hour activity. People are withdrawing, and they need to be monitored for any dangerous consequences of that. And what we can observe is that, again, we did not see improvements across the board between last time and between the January results and our current results. And in general, when we looked at, tried to identify why that was happening, the major fallout was, again, that documentation of why an inmate was refusing the either medication or monitoring. So what it consists of is the nurse would go in, ask the person how they were, observe their behavior and other signs, would also take blood pressure and ask them if they wanted medication in order to address symptoms. And in particular on the night shift, if people don't want to be disturbed, they may be refusing. We did not see documentation that the nurses were taking the next step in order to observe and see what was occurring. So next one, and the next one. Thanks, Tisa. So our overall impressions, we were able to confirm that the report that WellPath was submitting showed that what they were reporting was accurate. We saw evidence that time and effort were being invested by WellPath in making improvements. We saw that in the form of training, logs of training of their staff, and other evidence of different management interventions. We also saw, as you will have also, that we're not seeing sustained improvement on these areas of focus. Some go up, but then they come back down again. We don't see a steady or even unsteady progress toward improvement and being able to retire all of these measures and move on to new things to focus. So in my opinion, the likely difficulties that are being experienced, one is that it's a complex environment to make change in. There's ACSO, WellPath, and also AFBH, which is the behavioral health arm of my own agency. All of them touch these processes and all need to be in alignment about how to change them. Big changes are harder when you have multiple, multiple large organizations touching a process. The lack of unified EHR, which you have addressed, thank you for that support, is going to make a big difference. The general difficulty of making large system changes, and that's what's required really to address a lot of these things. And then the difficulty of managing a 24/7, 365 workplace. That I have been in charge of doing that before, large hospital systems, and it's very, very difficult to make sure that the nighttime healthcare is the same as the daytime healthcare. In particular, we saw that documentation was really a struggle, and making sure that that was consistent and that the culture in the organization is attentive to that. So next one, I think that's it for me.
Thank you, Dr. Clennon.
All right, so upcoming. So obviously the RFP for a third-party consultant is out. Dr. Clennon and her team will still be involved of this process even when the third party is decided. We're developing a very robust and complex, using our lessons learned from now, plus where we see the future of our agency and the facility going with CalAIM and EPIC, as I stated earlier, into this next RFP. It'll be one of the most complex RFPs that we've done in partnership with procurement. And we are going to work with County Council and look at the current provisions we have to establish penalties and things like that with the lack of movement. That'll be with County Council's input.
Thank you, Lieutenant Murphy. Just a couple clarifying questions before I defer to my colleagues. Can you tell us when the MAZARS contract ended? Was that June 30th?
I believe it was, yes, June 30th.
Yes, June 30th. Yes. Okay. And then what's the deadline for the RFP to close for the new quality assurance evaluator?
I don't know that off the top of my head. It's soon.
It's out, though, now.
It's out, yes.
Okay. Those are all my questions now. I have many more, but I want to be respectful and also defer to my colleagues. I want to welcome Supervisor Miley and see if there are any others that have questions at this time before we open up public comment on items 1 and 2. Supervisor Tam.
Thank you, Chair Marquez. I appreciate the presentation. It helps me appreciate the complexity of working with multiple departments. And so my questions kind of fall in two categories. One is when you're talking about people that refuse monitoring or refuse medication, do we have the, do you think we have the appropriate staffing and expertise to make those assessments on reasons why, like if somebody was obviously intoxicated and not capable, is it a matter of checking the box, or they're able to sign signatures, or how? What's the level of, staffing that we have in terms of making those assessments?
If I understand the question correctly, Supervisor, it would be a nurse who is actually bringing the medication. So that is, that's the kind of individual, the credentialing of the individual who brings medications to people. And then usually there's a second person who would be one of the deputies who can witness, is there as a witness if a medication is refused. If the person says, fine, I thank you for bringing my meds and takes them, then that's recorded as a medication delivered. It's in the case of a refusal that those other things come into play.
And these are nurses that are part of the WellPath?
Yes.
Staffing, okay. And when we talk about the other side, you're saying it's important to have consistency when it comes to enforcement and the document requirements. And, you know, we struggle with the siloed effect in the county with the sheriff, the behavioral health, Alameda County Health, and obviously a third-party provider. How do you, I know you're doing a look-back assessment, but how do you think we can best address that part? Because the enforcement is also a key part of making sure that we have the appropriate level of care and having the quality assurance that we need from our provider. Mm.
So there are, it comes down to management of employees, which many of us have been in, have either been the employees or the managers where this is happening. And if there becomes a culture of what people learn from each other is we don't fill out that blank on the form, or we don't check that, we don't have to do that, then it becomes difficult to change that. So a lot of effort to change that culture when, if that's what people have in their minds. And the way that we see that WellPath has approached that is the way I would do it too, which is you start out by sitting down with the staff who are doing it on the night shift, on the whatever, wherever it's happening, and you listen to them, you talk to them, why is this not happening? And then you make it clear that, no, this needs to happen and the reason for it. And the reason for it is that when you skip those things, that's where safety lies, is when you follow your procedures. That's how you stay safe, and that's how things don't fall through the cracks. But on a day-to-day basis, it can seem very routine and tedious to do those things. So you go over that again with people, you reinforce it, and then the manager every day in the morning, this is WellPath is doing this now, in the morning they look back and see, are there any charts and can I identify the person, a nurse, who needs to be reminded about this. So it's that, the unsexy, you know, day-to-day work of working with employees and making sure that the priorities are high. The next phase of that, the thing to back that up, what you'll see is, this is a serious matter, and the analogy that comes to my mind is not serious, but there's a whack-a-mole problem. If what you focus on will get better for a period of time because people are all thinking about it, and then when it gets good and you move to the next topic, then the performance on that one can sink back down again, and you see this kind of jagged line of performance, and that's what we see. So what I believe I see in this system is that WellPath has been working to fix these problems, has relied on primarily on education of staff, on written protocols, and on feedback to individual staff. Those things are necessary, but they are not sufficient. And the next level is to build in systems that make it easy for people to do the right thing and hard to do the wrong thing. And your assistance with getting a new unified medical record. Current medical record does not remind people. It allows them to close a chart to say, I'm done with this without, you know, with blanks in it, right? In fact, a lot of this is paper process, actually, not in the record. And we all know in our lives, right, have situations where if you don't fill out a form, you know, there's a required field that will not allow you to complete whatever that transaction is. There, none of that system help is right now behind these processes. So I apologize. That might have been more than you really wanted to know, Supervisor Tam. But
no, that's helpful. Basically, you're talking about the need for a systems approach and built-in coordination so you have warm handoffs between different expertise. But we just need to have that oversight. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Klein, if you could stay up there, because I'm going to piggyback on her questions. I had a similar one. So with respect to the refusal to take medication, obviously you're not just going to a patient once and offering the medication. That's continuous, right? Whatever the dosage, the time frame is, that's consistent touch points. It's not just one time they refuse and you don't ask again. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure.
I'm going to say that we would certainly want that, and that I don't remember seeing in the charts what that process looks like. So if it's an urgent medication, some medications, you know, can even be skipped for a whole day without difficulty. But where I remember seeing this discussed was in the medications for withdrawal, where it is an urgent matter.
Okay.
And there is a requirement for people to go back within the same shift.
Okay.
But I couldn't tell you exactly how many hours, for instance.
So it may depend on the medication. Okay, thank you for clarifying. And then I'm going to ask our interim AC Health Director if we have an update with respect to the status of Epic. I know we talked about that in the past. If you could please provide any updates.
Yeah, good morning, Supervisors. So we are continuing. Your board approved us to enter into a sole source negotiation agreement with Epic. We're continuing through those. Our plan was to bring that to the board sometime this fall, and it's looking like we may need to adjust the timeline a little bit, but we're having some internal conversations, and we'll bring that update to you soon. Part of the issue is that there have been additional regulatory requirements related to the behavioral health components, and so we're finding the need to do a little bit more due diligence on making sure that Epic can meet our needs there.
How confident are you that we'll be able to approve a contract by the end of the year?
I think it's probably more likely first quarter.
First quarter of next, okay.
And, you know, the implementation timeline for Epic would always have been sometime in 2027 it would be the go-live. Mm-hmm. So that could still be aligned with the RFP process.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. Supervisor Miley.
Yeah, thanks. I apologize for being a little late, so I just want to make sure the presentation was just this. That's it. Okay. Yep. So I'm going to follow up on a few questions, and Epic was one of them. So we anticipate that we'll have an Epic electronic medical records operational by the time we do who will be taking over medical services at the jail.
Yes, that's the goal.
That's going to be actualized, because I think that's been, Dr. Clannon's pointed out, we've heard from other reports too, in the past, that's been a problem in terms of delivering care.
Yes. So once the contract is approved, it takes about a year for implementation buildup, and then there's a go live about a year later. So we do anticipate it to be a complicated build, but it, there should be a system in place as the next.
Okay, and so we want to make sure we get timely updates on how that's progressing, because I do feel that's been a significant problem. I think, once again, in terms of delivering care to the inmates at Santa Rita Jail from any provider. Then another question that I've asked in the past, and I don't see any reference to it here in the report, but with the RFP, if the county decides we don't want to have a private provider, we want to have a public provider, we want to do the, take on this responsibility internally, it's not for the Sheriff's Department, it's for County Council, do we need an RFP process for that? And I've asked this of County Council before, so hopefully you have an answer.
Yeah, this is Kathy Liam from the Office of the County Council. As I mentioned at the last joint meeting, if you are using internal county employees, then you would not need to have an RFP for that. We don't typically procure that. That's for outside contracts. There could be a negotiated MOU in order to enable the budget and the funding, but that would not be pursuant to RFP typically.
And if it's, would that also apply if the Alameda Health Systems?
Alameda Health Systems is a public hospital authority and is separate from the county, so that would not be an internal county function.
That would not be an internal county contract.
That would not be an internal county contract.
Even though they're a public entity?
They are a public entity, and there are cases where the board waives competitive procurement for public entities, but it would be a contract with an outside provider.
So they'd have to go through the procurement process. That would be your legal opinion.
I would say that there would need to be a contract with an outside provider, whether it's through the procurement process, through waiver of competitive procurement, but it would be a documented procurement.
Okay. And I'm not presuming they'll want to do this, but we need to have some clarity on that if they should decide. So I just want to, so if they should decide to go through, to want to have this responsibility, will they have to go through a procurement process, or can they contract directly with the county without a procurement RFP process?
We would need to follow the county's procurement ordinance, which does permit the board to waive competitive procurement in some instances, but there would need to be a negotiated contract any entity that is outside of the county.
Okay. With the procurement, have we decided the scope and specifications? Who's going to put that together? Is that just going to be the Sheriff's Department, or will you be doing that in conjunction with Alameda County Health?
So we are setting up the own scope with, we have Clay Christensen from County Council, we have GSA, and we also with the Sheriff's Office, and we, Dr. Clannon's team, it's a multidisciplinary approach. So we're building it out. We're also seeing what's out there that other counties have done. Plus we're adding CalAIM, Epic, the consent decree, obviously, the early access, what recommendation CARES First, Jails Last have put in, the RAJ, and even best practices that align with the visions of 2036. So we're really making this a comprehensive thing.
Okay. So WellPath has had the contract since 20...
The dates are on the slide. They had it since 2020.
2022. But did they change their name?
So I think when the previous contractor, when the WellPath took over, most of the staff stayed. So I don't know if the company changed the name, but a lot of the staff stayed.
I'm just trying to understand if it's the same entity but a different name.
I don't believe so, but okay. I have to look into it, sir.
Okay, all right. And then so a lot of stakeholders are going to be involved in putting together the scope of this RFP. And you hope to have the scope finalized before the end of the year?
That is the hope, sir, yes.
I'm looking at the timeline here.
We've been working on it since July. We meet regularly, and we're building it as we go. We have experts not only from the county but outside. We even risk management, like every little thing we can think of, we want this to be a very robust and complex.
All right, because I know the sheriff really wants to do a very good job with this going forward. Then the evaluation team, what do you foresee? Who will be on this, the evaluation and selection team? Not what people, but what type of entities will be on that team? Just the scoring, the selection, the interviewing, the questioning, the evaluation.
I don't think we're there yet in the process. We will have, and I can't say who will be on the actual selection panel yet.
Yeah, I'm not saying individuals. I want to know categories.
We will have, obviously, from internal the sheriff's office, probably someone in the health field, and then the third person, I don't know you off the top of my head.
Just three?
I believe so. Whatever GSA will recommend. Go ahead, boss.
Let me add to that. So GSA is the one that develops the panel that will do all the inquiries and whatnot. So GSA works with us, but we're not the ones that do the selection. GSA will do that selection.
Okay. And GSA isn't here today, okay.
I'm here.
She's online? Oh, good. Oh, she's got her hand up, okay. Can she respond?
So we, in partnership with Health and Sheriff, look at what the appropriate subject matter experts, that's a requirement. I would typically, for a procurement of this size, definitely recommend up to 5 selection committee members. Sometimes, similar to our construction projects, we do have sometimes more than one selection committee depending on the topic. So we may break it up into smaller groups and then bring all the scores together. So I need to look at the full scope, the subject matter expertise in those categories, and put the panel together. We also have restrictions on like certain members of the sheriff's department will not be allowed to be on the selection committee to make sure we're not inappropriately or have the appearance of, any favoritism. So we also often ask for people from other counties or maybe from the state that have similar contracts.
Okay. Yeah, because this procurement is an extremely important procurement, similar to the EMS ambulance procurement. So we will make sure we do it as well and as robust as possible. So what I'm curious to know, what's the protest and appeal process? Can you walk us through that? Kimberly?
Say that again, sir. I apologize.
The appeal and protest process.
Yes, so earlier I did share that if there is a protest period that once we issue a notice of intent to award, that all bidders have a timeline, could be 5-7 days to protest, then that goes to the Office of Acquisition Policy in GSA. It's independent of procurement. They review the merits of the protest and talk to county council, send a response. If we do not uphold the process, then we bring the procurement forward to the board. The bidders do have an opportunity to appeal that decision to the auditor's office. So if they submit that appeal, the auditor reviews the procurement, the original points of the protest, and that's on the auditor's timeline.
And then after the auditor completes her review and makes her findings, then it comes to the board?
So if the auditor agrees with the Office of Acquisition Policy that the protest will not be upheld, then it comes to the board. If the auditor believes there are supports the protest, then we may have to start the procurement over.
Okay. And as I said, go ahead.
They usually contact me to let me know their findings, and we may make a decision to start over. It just depends on the outcome of that.
Okay. And as I said, typically the board doesn't get involved with the procurement process prior to getting to the board. particularly in terms of looking at the RFP before it's issued. I'm not suggesting we look at this RFP before it's issued, but you know, clearly there'll be a lot of eyes paying attention to this whole process once it does commence. Have we done any analysis of, because I know it was mentioned, other jurisdictions, other counties in the state or the nation around their vendor for inmate medical services?
There are several vendors. Go ahead, Director.
I was going to defer to you. I was going to say that I believe the sheriff is having those conversations.
There are several vendors out there within the state that our other county sheriff's office uses. So there are others out there.
And what I'm looking for is best practices. Do we know any best practices either in the state or nationally?
It's a very, very complex question because facilities are different in size, capacity, population, and then the different services being delivered. We have a more robust system, and we're proud of that here in Alameda County. We're building that out. So our processes are different from what other facilities are. So the conversations have been, I've been having those conversations with different sheriffs, but we definitely have a large facility where it's apples and oranges, really.
Okay. All right. Those answer my questions.
Thank you, Supervisor Miley. I just have a couple more questions. I think, I don't know if you want to tag team it or if Dr. Clennon might be able to respond, but looking at the presentation, on slide 14, compliance with the 8-hour screening standard dropped from 73% last year to 35% this year, even though 95% are completed within 24 hours. Do you know what factors are driving the decline and how will the 8-hour requirement consistently be met? Actually, I think that's slide 15, right? Yes. Nope. Oh, sorry, 14. Sorry, I apologize.
Yeah.
Yes, 14. Thank you.
What I know about that is that so the receiving screening happens in the area before people are assigned to a housing unit, and there are multiple kinds of screens that need to occur during that time. One is performed by the sheriffs that has to do with which housing unit they should be in. There's a behavioral health screening, which is separate from the general medical one, and then the medical one. And I know in discussion with WellPath that they have deferred doing their screening in order to allow those other two things to happen and have been in favor of a process in which that screen could be done when people have arrived at their housing unit, which is more comfortable, less noisy. There's a lot of advantages to that. And what we noticed was that has been causing the timeliness part of that standard not to be met. So getting all those things done within the 8 hours trying to do most screening in the housing unit has caused this difficulty and that. I think it's a great example of where there are some unintended consequences of changes that were made, and it's going to require everybody working together to be able to resolve this.
Okay. Thank you for that background and clarification. On slide 15, opioid withdrawal monitoring compliance is as low as 8% on the night shift compared to 41% on the morning shift. What steps are being taken to address this disparity and to improve consistency and reliability of monitoring on all shifts?
So one thing that I have not done is actually spoken to those staff, and that I'm curious, those numbers make me very curious and concerned, mm-hmm. but curious and want to know from them what's happening. But what I will say is that the actions that I know from these reports have been taken by WellPath is to do day-by-day screening in which a manager immediately responds the next day if this standard is not met overnight, to do counseling with the individual nurses involved. And also there has been additional training, education, feedback to the group.
Great. Thank you so much. We're now going to move on to public comment, and this is public comment on item 1 and 2. So just to repeat, item number 1 is an informational item regarding the procurement timeline for comprehensive medical services at Santa Rita Jail. And item number 2 is also an informational item, update on medical quality assurance monitoring at Santa Rita Jail. And we will give the community 2 minutes to speak. If you're here in the room, please fill out a speaker card. If you're online, please raise your hand.
Richard Spiegelman.
Good morning. Thank you for this conversation and this opportunity. I'm Richard Spiegelman. I've lived in Alameda County for 55 of the last 57 years, and I chair the Interfaith Coalition for Justice in Our Jails. There's a lot to think through about the two presentations. I just wanted to say a couple of things about the schedule of the procurement. I think it's pretty clear what the times are that are required to get from step 1 to 2 to 3 and so on. And I get it that no one can quite yet say what the date will be that the first step will happen. But I would encourage someone, GSA perhaps, to put dates at the bottom of the list. When's the date by which this thing needs to happen in order to provide enough transition time? Even understanding that there could be an appeal that could mess that up, let's see some dates to aim for. So that's my thought on that. On the RFP process, I think it's really important that the county, I mean, I was impressed, Lieutenant, with what you said about all the complexity going on. I really encourage you to get a good consultant, maybe from outside the county, who's done this kind of work with a variety of counties to see, help you see what are you missing or what do you have to think about in this incredibly complex list of things you're trying to get through. Secondly, I wanted to encourage you to think about the RFP somehow conveying that a certain percent, maybe 90% of the funds that go to the contract should be used for direct medical services rather than profit or administration. Something to help this county be the best it possibly could be. I think the RFP needs to find a way to disqualify a bidder with a history of unacceptable prior performance, whether documented by Mazars or the county or any other information that we have about bidders. Thank you so much.
Caller, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes. John?
Hi, this is John Lindsay Poland. 2 points. First, a bit of context. Nationally, the best medical outcomes come from reduced jail time. That's the best medical outcomes. Nationally, every year in custody reduces a person's life expectancy by 2 years. So, and we know that in Santa Rita Jail, more than 90% of the people in the jail are unsentenced. So there are other programs before the county, including those of Reimagining Adult Justice and the Care First, that would contribute to that end and therefore better medical outcomes for the people who are or could be in Santa Rita Jail, including the pretrial release program, the grant for which is now being discussed for between the district attorney's office and the public defender's office. Second point, and I think this is what Supervisor Miley in some ways was getting at, is that the board should really give direction on the criteria for the RFP, not on who should be chosen. And for systems change, I noticed that Dr. Clannon's list of causes for these very poor percentages did not include incentives. So this comes to the point that Richard Spiegelman was just making, that the percentage of funds that is used to actually provide services should be high. Rather than having a fixed contract amount that gives an incentive to providers not to send people out for services, not to staff up. Staffing is obviously a key component here. If you need more information as a board to weigh in on that criteria, I would urge you to get that information, whether it is from another presentation or from the consultants that the Sheriff's Office is hiring. because you really, we need you to weigh in on those criteria. Thanks so much.
Mickey Duxbury.
Good morning, Supervisors and Sheriff Sanchez and Dr. Clannon and everybody from the Sheriff's Office. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak here, as I always do. And it might seem that we say the same things over and over again, so I'm going to try to say something a little different today. I think everyone in this room, whether the Sheriff's Department, elected officials, behavioral health, agrees that we want much improved health care in the jail. I was talking to a woman in a wheelchair at church yesterday about this meeting today, and she said, make sure you tell them that the people that are most vulnerable to inadequate treatment in the jail are disabled and the seriously mentally ill. And I know everyone in this room knows that. What we're asking for is very simple. You cannot, in good moral conscience, continue to contract with a corporation that is known nationally as one that has denied much needed care in order to increase their profits. And it should be very clear that the RFP must include criteria that disqualifies a bidder who has a history of poor performance. This jail, as you everybody knows here more than me even, is a revolving door. Most people in the jail will be back again. They return to their communities with poor health or worse health. Then that revolving door just goes faster and faster. And this revolving door, the medical care juncture of that door, really needs to change. We have provided each of the supervisors and the Sheriff's Department with the names and contact info for all the medical, the heads of medical care in Contra Costa, Marin, San Francisco, Santa Clara counties, because they have made it possible to provide quality health care, increase the likelihood that people have a plan before they get out, increase the likelihood that they enter into programs, increase the likelihood that they go home in better shape than when they went in. That's a lot to ask for a jail, and we understand that some of this has to be solved in the streets and not just on the jail. But we also sent the name of a nationally known expert in constructing RFPs for jails and prisons, and I really strongly ask that you speak to them. Thank you very much.
Caller, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes. Allison?
Hello, this is Allison Monroe. I appreciate these detailed efforts to try to make good care at the jail a reality. Dr. Clannon's discussion I found especially real of how a person might be required to fill out an intake form and capture certain information at an intake and wouldn't actually do it. Ideally, care would be done by people who we have eyes on, people we know, people who are responsible to us, whether it's inside or outside the jail. And I appreciate how terribly complicated it can get to make that a reality. But we will. Thank you very much.
Caller, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes. Jean.
Good morning. This is Jean Moses from District 5, and I want to thank Supervisor Marquez and everybody else, but particularly for emphasizing the value of community involvement in this process. I urge the board to move forward with all due speed. The people in our jail are being under risk every day, and furthermore, there are certainly could be a protest. And with such a complicated contract, we could conceivably have to redo the RFP. So speed is of the utmost importance. When someone has been chosen, as has been said in the past, a new provider will need time to ramp up. Our experience with WellPath and with Corazon, the company that provided medical services prior to 2017, have amply demonstrated that a for-profit company is not the way to go for our county. We should follow the example of Marin or Contra Costa in Santa Clara and San Francisco and go for a not-for-profit alternative. I also appreciate what Sheriff Sanchez mentioned in terms of the size and complexity of our need, and that really further emphasizes that we have to keep this process moving and that we have to hire the best possible consultant, which I believe is probably the one that Mickey just referred to. thank you for emphasizing the value of community involvement. I think it's pretty clear that community is also working very hard on this. And I would ask that Director Cassaway please add specific times for the community to get information on what's going on and provide input, so that the time frame should allow input from the community and an update to the community as well. Lastly, I want to emphasize what John Lindsay Poland said, and please keep trying to keep people out of the jail and provide services in the community.
Thank you. Your time's up. Caller, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes, Bob.
Yes, I'm Bob Britton with the Interfaith Coalition for Justice in Our Jails. I agree with all of the comments of the public comments thus far. I'll try not to repeat them. I have a couple of questions, and I know that typically the policy is that you don't respond to questions at this point, but you could put them in your memory banks to try and refer to them when the time comes, either today or at subsequent hearings. I want to thank Supervisor Miley very much for asking the question I had about the possibility of a public agency, whether it was the county itself or another public agency such as AHS, being able to be awarded the contract, perhaps without bidding. And I wanted to point out that the NCCHC standard that we're trying to reach is quite high for these items. It's 98%. So that gives a little more context to the terrible performance of WellPath to date. And then whether it's WellPath or whether it's another for-profit entity bidding, I would urge that a high failure rate be a disqualification for any entity that's bidding. And then I'm wondering, at what point do elements of the RFP become public, or does it, or subject to a Public Records Act request? And the bids submitted, does that ever become public or subject to a Public Records Act request? Thank you.
Caller, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes. Willem?
This is Willem Veendekamp, and I'm a resident of District 3 and a member of the Interfaith Coalition for Justice in Our Jails, Board of Supervisors and Sheriff and others. Thank you very much for having this hearing. I appreciate that we can voice our opinions about this. And I think after all what we have heard also today, there is ample evidence that WellPath is not providing the care that the people in our county jail deserve. And so there is also no good reason for renewing the contract with them. We know that all the promises they make are given in by their profits and not by the care for the people that are in our jails. And what I heard this morning, especially too, also from you, Sheriff, is that you intend to have good care for the people in our jail, because that's what they deserve. And so I recommend that you take the care of the people who are in our jails, in our jail, that you take it in your own hands, and that we get no bidders with poor performance, and also that you provide as much transparency as possible and continue to have the public, the community, I would say rather, involved as much as possible. Thank you very much for what you're doing.
We have no more speakers for items 1 and 2.
Thank you. Supervisor Miley?
Yeah, just to weigh in on a couple of the either questions or comments from the public. Oh, first of all, let me apologize once again. I thought the meeting started at 10. I was looking at my schedule as opposed to 9:30. So I asked questions I've already covered. Excuse me. Now, the RFP will be subject to the public once it's publicly released. Is that correct, County Council? Once it's publicly released, then the public can have access to the RFP.
So this is Kathy Lee again, and I see Director Gasway also has her hand up. But I will say that in general, GSA does post the RFP publicly, and it is publicly available upon its release.
Okay. And then should the board want to weigh in on the content of the RFP? Once again, I'm not saying we should, but you know, we got a whole new board here, and it's highly unusual, but we have done it in the past. I think the board needs to make that call, and I don't know the comfort level of my colleagues if they're comfortable wanting to weigh in on the content of the RFP before it's released. Obviously, anyone who, the community or whoever else, provides input into the RFP, they cannot bid on the RFP. Folks can, you know, obviously give us suggestions and things of that nature, but they, if they are actually involved in the shaping of the RFP, they cannot bid on it. I don't know what type of criteria we might want to establish, but I don't want to prematurely prejudice any potential applicant from applying. I want to make sure we have a fair process. One of the speakers mentioned a national expert. I asked my staff, you said that you have a national expert that looks at these type of RFPs, shaping these. Did you? Okay. Yeah, make sure my staff gets it, because I asked them, and I don't think we've seen it. Okay. All right. Thank you. Those are all my comments and responses.
Thank you. So just want to thank everyone again for their participation today. We heard loud and clear that medical care at Santa Rita Jail is more than a service provision. It's about continuously evaluating and improving processes to promote positive health outcomes. It's about centering justice-involved individuals like any other county patient and continuously strengthening systems of care to promote dignity and well-being. Procurement is not simply an administrative exercise. It is how we begin to embed equity in our community and a process that is rooted in public transparency and accountability. We still have much to do, but step by step, we are growing our knowledge base and partnerships required to move in the right direction. We will continue to coordinate with all key stakeholders within the county and across the community to ensure this roadmap includes informed goals and comprehensive metrics that will drive quality care and improve health outcomes for our justice-involved patients. Again, thank you to Sheriff and her office, her team, AC Health, GSA, and our advocates who continue to promote this collective progress. Also want to acknowledge Aaron Armstrong and Brenda Gomez. They were instrumental in getting our presenters geared up for today. So thank you for your hard work. I am going to respectfully ask my committee members, I think we've done an excellent job since May with tracking these issues. So I'd like to ask for another joint PPC and Health Committee meeting either in January or February once we have more information in terms of next steps with the rollout. We could also discuss the criteria at that time and hopefully have updates on Epic. So that is my request to bring this item back in either January or February once we have a better sense of the timelines. Is there a second?
I'm fine with it, but I don't think we need a motion.
No, we don't need a motion. Okay, just direction. Okay. I'm not hearing anyone opposed to that direction, so we'll accept that. And our office will be in coordination with the presenters to track next steps. So now we will move on to general public comment. So this is public comment under any items under the purview of Public Protection Committee or the Health Committee, but not on today's agenda. So are there any members of the public that would like to make a comment in person or online?
Angela Upshaw.
Good morning, everyone. Supervisor Tam, Marquez, and Miley. My name is Angela Upshaw, and I am the Chief Program Officer for Insight Housing. We're a service provider, homeless services, for the past 55 years. And I'm here to respectfully request that the board considers two critical actions to improve the efficacy and sustainability of our vital shelter and interim housing programs. First, we urge the board to transition all existing shelter and interim housing contracts from the Social Services Agency, SSA, to the Office of Homeless Care and Coordination, OHCC. Given OHCC's ongoing and close work with these programs, their deep operational knowledge, and their central role in this county's overall strategy to address homelessness, they are best positioned to provide the improved oversight, coordination, and support that these vital programs require. Second, we ask the board to significantly increase the current bed night rate to a minimum of $97 per night. This is an urgent necessity. As was discussed at the May 12th Joint Social Services and Health Committee meeting, SSA proposed raising the rate from $36.42 to $48.43. This proposed increase is still significantly below the actual operating costs, which are between $87 and $98 per night. The rate is insufficient to meet the escalating operational costs, including staffing, security, case management, housing navigation, food support, and maintenance, which jeopardizes the stability and quality of care provided. Investing in a realistic rate of $97 per night is an investment in successful outcomes for our unhoused neighbors. Thank you for your consideration.
We have no more speakers for public comment.
Thank you, everyone. This meeting is adjourned. Have a great day.